not sure it's not going to work out. I think today, honorable members, members of the media and officials, we really are gathered here to receive responses to submissions on the justice administered fund bill by the department. I informed that Mr. Johan Dilang, who is with us here, will take us through that process. And you are most welcome, and you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Jim. Good morning to all the members, and that it's a privilege to be present in this committee again. Unfortunately, my role is not going to be that intensive. I will be relying on the assistance of my two colleagues. The left of me is Mr. Nico van Harmelen. He's director of third-party funds from our financial offices, assisted by an advocate on the vault, Alta. She's also principally responsible for the drafting of this bill. And she will deal with the comments. Okay, I believe, and I've been informed that
we men do the work and you announce their product.
Yes, I will take the credit for that. I understand that the committee has already been briefed on this piece of legislation towards the end of March. So with your leave, unless you want us to, we're not going to go back into the history, save the state that what the bill seeks to do is to just provide a sound legal basis for the practice that has been followed since the Exchequer Act, the old Exchequer Act, has been repealed by the Public Finance Management Act, which kept us in a sort of a grey area for some time, and with the insistence and assistance of the Treasury, that gave birth to this piece of legislation, which is just aimed at putting practices that's been taking place at the moment on a sound legal footing, so as we avoid further audited general queries, etc. And with that, and with your leave, without further ado, I ask Ms. van der Waal to attend to the responses on the comments from the GCB.
Ms. van der Waal, you're
welcome. Good morning, honourable chairs and honourable members of the committee, and thank you so much for the invitation to be here, and it's an honour for the department to respond to the comments that we received. I don't know if you want your memories to be refreshed about the bill, what it's all about, and if I can just go on and deal with the comments I've received.
May I hear from the honourable members, what is your response to this? They have not seen it safely. But we said it's responses to the submissions. So we proceeded with the response.
Okay, right. Now, we've only received one comment, and that was from the General Counsel of the Bar. And when we went through the comment, it was clear to us that they are under the impression that this bill also caters for the Guardians Fund, which is not the case. But I'll deal with it as it comes. The first was those three finances of the fund, and the General Counsel of the Bar said that as presently formulated, clause 3A, on the face hereof applies to all monies received by any person on behalf of a third party, such as a minor dependent child in terms of a maintenance order granted in terms of the Maintenance Act. As such, the effect of this section as currently formulated is wide enough to encompass payment of maintenance for minor dependent child by one parent to another parent, or maintenance payments received on behalf of a minor child by administrators of deceased estates. So their concern was that we are talking about all maintenance, but that is not the case. Section 15 of the Maintenance Act provides for orders to be made by the presiding officer. If the court finds a person liable for paying maintenance, it will make an order for the amount of maintenance to be paid. The court will also determine when and how maintenance payments must be made. The court can order maintenance money to be paid in one of the following ways: at the local magistrate's office, any other government office designated for this service, and this is the maintenance we are talking about in the Justice Administrative Fund. And then it can also be into the bank account. You can notify the person for sure directly to the person who's entitled to the money or by means of an order that goes to the employer or the person is liable for paying maintenance to deduct the maintenance payment directly from the employee's salary. The maintenance referred to in clause 3 of the bill is maintenance money that the court direct shall be paid at the local magistrate's court and not all of the maintenance. So that is our response to the GCB's first concern that we are talking about all maintenance, which is not the case. The second was it is admitted that the bill does not make it clear as to what amounts are required to be paid into the fund. Now, the amounts are determined by the court and cannot be specified in the bill. The money in the Justice Administered Funds Bill comprises bail, fines, maintenance, money not immediately identified, and interest. This is not new. It reflects the current situation. The bill merely incorporates in legislation the current position to give it a legal basis as requested by the Auditor General. Now, if you look back into the history of the whole, what we now call Justice Administered Fund, it was previously called the Deposit Account, and that was under the Exchequer Act. And then the deposit account became known as the Money in Trust Fund, and then it was a third-party fund. And now we are calling it now the Justice Administered Fund. Now the whole problem was, as Johan indicated, was that this deposit account was opened in terms of the Old Exchequer Act. And when the Act was repealed, the Auditor General felt that there's no more legal basis for this deposit account or money in trust or TPF, whatever it is, and that we need legislation just to form a basis for it. So what we did in close cooperation with National Treasury, and we had numerous meetings and discussions with them and with our CEO's office, the current position, we just dated it and made it into a bill. So there's nothing new about what is being done. So I don't know if you are happy with that explanation or if Mr. Van Harmelen maybe can clear it up if there's some uncertainty regarding the determination of the amount of money that we can't really determine an amount or on maintenance that I already said.
Now, maybe you have made your contribution, but you are quick to have your contribution to make.
Thank you, Chairperson, and morning, members. Chair, just to add on what Advocate and Walter said is that in 1999 with the introduction of the PFMA, the Department of State Expenditures was then known, said that these monies are no longer viewed as government monies and that it's viewed as trust monies. So from April 2000, we closed down the PMD account, the Paymaster General account, and we opened commercial bank accounts for all the courts throughout the country. Since 2001-2002 financial year, the Auditor General has been hounding us to say that there is no legal basis for us to manage these monies. And so today, that's the end product of the concerns that the Auditor General has raised regarding the lack of a legal framework for the management of these monies.
Thank you. Your chairperson at the end. You still have something to say?
No, thanks to you.
I don't. Are you responsible for all the legislative drafting?
Of this particular bill, it was me.
I mean generally, all the laws that we've drafted, will they come to you or it was that issue?
No, it's not this, just this one, and then there was the amendment to the debt collectors and the amendments to the sheriff's bill. So each of us in the Division of Legislative Development has got certain bills that we are dealing with, and I was the lucky nominee for this one.
If I may, Felicity, also, she had the privilege of dealing with the torture legislation, which was just at the end of the previous term as well.
That's why I'm
being
back here.
No, you know what, I put this question because I think as a committee, we would be interested to see in the long medium term what bills will be coming from your unit, because we seem to be taken by surprise all the time. Suddenly there's a bill. We don't know the motivation for that. So if we could have a list of all the bills that you have in mind, so that we are also able to prepare our problem.
Certainly, Chair, that's our legislative program we will see to. Normally, when we get to the briefings before budget hearings, that should in the ordinary course be presented to the committee, but we've got that thing all the time, and I will just arrange that we get the latest update on that, Chair.
I will appreciate that. Thank you for a short and sweet presentation.
I'm not done yet. Thank you.
Oh, I thought you said it's only that.
No, no.
But also quicker, then it will be quicker done. Thank you, Chairperson, and Advocate Honourable. What I would actually like to see, you know, presentation, is to indicate what was the problem and how it will be addressed by the group. Because remember, all the participants had a problem of accounting, and this is why they were disqualified for all years, and that's why they need crystal. So for now, as you're sitting here, what I hear is the names that have been changing and changing, but we need to also be put on board as to what were the problem areas and how this bill is going to be addressing those problem areas.
Okay. then I'll take you back to the history now. Now, in terms of the Exchequer Act in 1975, the Department opened the following accounts: the Department of Justice. It was the boat account, it was the Guardian's Fund, and it was the deposit account. Now, the deposit account is the one we are dealing now with, which has all the name changes. Now, the deposit account was established by the Department of Justice by virtue of the Treasury in terms of Section 11A of the Repealed Exchequer Act. That was the basis for the deposit account. In the deposit account was the following money. Sorry, it was the general. It was money received which could not be allocated immediately. Estate money regarding estate administered by the magistrate in terms of our 1987. Now that is falling away since the master is dealing now with all the states. And then it was money paid as compensation as a condition of suspended sentence. It was bail money, it was fines, and it was maintenance. So all the money that was paid in deposit account in terms of the Exchequer Act, that account needed to stay in place. But then with the new legislation, the PMA, it says, of the PMA, it says Section 15 of the new Act provides that all money received by the national government must be paid into the National Revenue Fund except money received by, and then it says the national government from a donor. It says a lot of things from donor agencies, which in terms of legislation or the agreement with the donor must be paid to the Reconstruction and Development Program, a national department operating as a trading entity. So it sets out a lot of things that stays in place. Now, what happened was that since the PMA came into operation, the Auditor General said that the legal basis for the deposit account, which was in terms of the Exchequer Act, no longer exists. So we need to create a legal basis for that specific account, the deposit account, which became the third-party funds, which are now called the Justice Administered Fund. So we got legal opinions that say that it would be better, although the Act says, the new Act says, that anything done in terms of the provisions of the Exchequer Act, which can be done in terms of the provision of this Act, must be regarded as having been done in terms of this Act. So they said that although it means that there is a legal basis that the deposit account can continue, it's not spelled out in so many words. And that is why the Auditor General is of the opinion that we have to create a legal basis for this particular account, the third-party account, which now has been maintenance, paid to a court, not all maintenance, fines, bail, money that cannot be allocated because sometimes money is paid into court and nobody knows from whom what it is, and interest. So we have to create a legal basis. So the problem in short is there was no legal basis for this account, and now we have to create a legal basis for this account, and that's what we are attempting to do with the concurrence of the National Treasury.
Thank you, Chairperson and colleagues, and thank you, Department of Justice. Chairperson, I think this is a response to AG recommendation that various party funds should be administered accordingly. So thank you for being so progressive, the department. And what I would like to know is whether the General Council of our comments are the only comments so far. And again, the issue of bullet number one on this document, clarity putting question, monies received which could not be allocated immediately. What kind of monies are those?
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm aware that CHEPS and the department has been receiving an unqualified report, but for the third party funds, does that say this is in response to what the Auditor General has been saying all along?
Okay.
So maybe you can also comment a bit on that. Thank you, Chair.
Let's take two more. Honorable Hon and Honorable Majak.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think in relation to the last question of the Honourable Sapo, I would want to know, because my understanding from briefings in the past by the AG on this very specific issue was that his disclaiming an opinion was not only based on the fact that there was not a legal basis for the department to handle this, these monies. But there was also issues with how money was handled in terms of bookkeeping and so on. Now, my reading of the of this bill is that we are only addressing the legal basis. So can the department maybe tell us as to how the other issues the Auditor General ordinarily has had will be addressed so that we get away from the adverse audit opinions. Thank you.
Mr. Dilange, I guess you are the most competent person to deal with that aspect, because lawyers, they usually can add.
Gee, thank you very much for that. That's it. Remark, Chief.
Let's hold on some intervention.
I just want to find out this way that there has been some form of consultation with the Office of the Auditor General. Towards the development of this bill, because the bill is an attempt to address the concerns of the Auditor General in terms of the money for the department to receive for various efforts. Has there been any consultation or any admission made by the Office of the Auditor General?
May I respond?
Thank you. I rely on the assistance of my colleagues again, but just to make it very clear, bill has really been drafted in consultation with those parties. But Mr. Van Harmelen will respond to some of the nitty-gritty issues, which is really, and I must confess this, for us as lawyers, we're not financial people. We rely on them when it comes to spelling out the detail. But before I ask him to assist the committee chair, so I just want to highlight briefly, as I understand, we only indeed received one response in response to the committee formal invitation, that was from the GCD. All the other interaction took place before the bill was in the process of drafting the bill. And the other thing is, and I'm sorry, I hope they're not going to repeat what I'm telling you, but I'm sure they're not. Personally, I think the regulations provision, clause 8, that is where you actually get the difficulty now. You get the, it is an empowering provision to lay down the law in terms of how exactly these things must be done, how you apply, how you pay out, what is the justification, what can and cannot be done. And I think that is part of the big problem at this stage. You do want to make payments, you want to collect the money, you want to manage the account, but and you do it, but there's no legal basis. You cannot say you're doing it in terms of this or in terms of that specifically. Once you put this in place, even if there's nothing wrong in practice, then you can at least have the legal basis, promulgate regulations to say, this is how you do it, this is the reason why you do it, and this is just the justification for doing that. But on that note, Chair, I'll ask, I don't know, Olga, would you like to carry on first, or should you want Professor Nico to respond?
Okay, I'll just make a comment.
For our purposes, we call the advocate for the ballot. Because if you say alter, our records won't know what we're talking about.
Okay. That's fine by me. Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair. Like Johan said, we drafted this bill.
You are doing the same thing.
I want to make my point, but it was done, I just want to confirm that it was done in consultation with National Treasury and the Auditor General's people. We had numerous, when we drafted it, they were actually we're sitting around the round table and we dropped that, so that was our function. And regarding the operation of the fund, how it works now and where the problems is, Mr. Van Armenen, you will address that because I don't know, so over to Mr. Van Armenen.
Thank you, Advocate Van Armenen. The one question that was asked by the honourable members is the monies that cannot be immediately allocated. These are monies that get paid into our bank account by the public or arrive in the past, arrive by post, and it wasn't clear from those bank deposits what that money was intended for, whether it was maintenance, bail, or fine. So in those cases, we keep it in a separate account until we can identify what the purpose of that money is. Then, Chairperson, Honourable Member Horn has alluded to the fact that there's other problems in the third-party funds environment, which is true. So one of the audit findings we are addressing through the introduction of this bill, but the department's also taken further steps to clean up the TPF environment. And I don't know if I'm allowed to announce that for TPF, we've always received the same opinions, that for the 2015-16 financial year, we've actually obtained a qualified opinion. So we're one step away from a non-qualified audit. So we are addressing those issues. We're also busy with the piloting. We're actually rolling out a new system for the administration of TPF. It's called ModraPay. And I don't want to allude to that, go into much detail there, but it will replace the legacy systems that we have, Janus and SAS, over a two-year period. We are running that out. And I think I'm going to leave that there just to confirm, yes, we've consulted with the Auditor General and National Treasury extensively. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, are there other questions or are you happy with the responses to the questions you made? Okay, so can you proceed?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Following comments that we received with regards to this section clause 3 was it is recommended that clause 3 A and B be amended to make reference to the receipt of money received by particular persons and or entities, for example the clerk of the maintenance court. Now, it will not be advisable, this is our response to this, to list the persons who must receive money. In the legislation referred to in Title 1, the specific act already stipulates the act in terms of which fines and loan tokens is to pay, stipulates whether it should be paid to the clerk of the court or to the court of the maintenance officer. It should be noted that although provision in legislation provides that money be paid to the clerk of the court, the maintenance court or the court, it is not paid to that specific person in person. In each magistrate's office there is a cash hall and the money is paid into the cash hall. It should also be borne in mind that it's not only lower courts that are affected but also superior courts. The the Departmental Financial Instruction deals at this age extensively with how money is received and dealt with, as Mr. Van Harmelen indicated. Then they went further and said, clause 3C would appear to contemplate inter alia money currently paid into the Guardian's fund. Now, 3C refers to money paid to court in terms of any rule of court or any law of which the intended beneficiary is a third party. Now, the rules of court refers to rules made by the Rules Board of Courts of Law, if you can refer back to the history in Table 1. The Guardian's Fund is a separate trust fund established and operated in terms of the administration of the State Act. As can be seen from Title 1, there is a separate account named Guardian's Fund, and it should not be confused with the Douglas Administered Fund. It should also be noted that the operative words here are paid to court. Money intended for the Guardian's Fund is not paid to court. The list of national legislation which is applicable is indicated in Title 1. This list represents some examples of national legislation. However, provincial and municipal legislation may also have provisions which require the payment of money to the court. These payments are then paid to the relevant authority from the Justice Administered Fund. And that is the responses we had on Clause 3. Then there was no comment on Clause 4, but then there was again some comments on Clause 5, dealing with the bank account and reserve account of the Justice Administered Fund. The GCB feels that in contrast to Clause 5.1 and Section 862 of the Administration of the State Act, provides that whenever any money or exceptions are received by the master under the Act or any other law, or in pursuance of an order of court, the master shall open the books of the Guardian's Fund and account in the name of the person to whom that money belongs, or the estate of which that money forms part, provided that if it is not known to whom such money belongs, or if it is more convenient, the account may be opened in the name of the person from whom that money has been received. Now, they feel that Clause 5.1 of the Bill grants a wide discretion to the accounting officer to open and maintain bank accounts as she or he thinks or she fit. In regard to money held in the fund for and on behalf of third parties, there does not appear to be any legally sustainable basis for the accounting officer to have wide discretion as opposed to narrowly prescribed discretion. Now, first of all, it should be noted that the Guardian's Fund is one trust account opened at a banking institution. There is not a separate bank account opened for each and every person. This is done administratively within the financial system of the department, and the same principle will apply to the Justice Administered Fund. And if you have any questions regarding this, Mr. Van Harmelen would be able to answer that in more detail. Within the system, a separate account for each person matters opened and maintained. The department is also not in agreement that the accounting officer has too wide discretion. The accounting officer gets his or her powers from the Public Finance Management Act, and in particular, it has Section 7, which provides that the National Treasury must describe the framework within which departments, public entities listed in Title 3, and constitutional institutions must conduct their cash management. A department authorized to open a bank account in terms of the prescribed framework may open a bank account only with a bank registered in South Africa, so it goes on itself about the bank account. But then what is more important is Chapter 5 of the PMA, which deals with departments and constitutional institutions, and more precisely with who the accounting officer is, the general responsibilities of the accounting officers, these are responsibilities relating to budgetary control, these are reporting responsibilities, information to be submitted by him or her, these are responsibilities when assets and liabilities are transferred, and so on. So it might seem that the accounting officer of a department, which is normally the DG of the department, has got a wide discretion and can do with money whatever she wishes, but that is not the case. The PMA really prescribes in detail what the situation is and how money should be handled. Then, they also have a problem. Clause Part 4 of the bill is used to contemplate that unclaimed money held in the fund become forfeit, presumably to the state, although the bill does not expressly so provide. 3 years after such money has been paid into the reserve account in terms of clause 541 of the bill, on the other hand, section 92 of the administration of the state act provides expressly for the forfeiture to the state of unclaimed money in the guardian's fund over a period of 30 years as from the date upon which a person became entitled to claim said money from the guardian's fund. They say there does not appear to be any rational basis for such a drastic reduction in the periods within which money may be claimed from the fund in a particular circumstance. Now, the department's response to this is that, first of all, the guardian's fund does not, again, form part of this law. Now, clause 4b deals expressly with unclaimed money and money which cannot be allocated into the categories listed in clause 3a2c. Unclaimed money will then be maintenance paid to the court, bail and money paid to the court in terms of the rules of court. We had an earlier version of the bill which said that these monies within 30 years after it has been paid into reserve account must be debited. But then National Treasury indicated that considering the risk of running a huge fund, Treasury is amenable to the idea of setting the maximum limit of reserve account rather than keeping funds in the reserve account for a period of 30 years. The clause was amended accordingly. But now one should bear in mind that it's only the excess in the reserve account that must be paid over to the National Revenue Fund. The main body of the money still stays in the reserve account. And as there is no specific prescription period, section 1 of the prescription act applies, which says that this money only becomes forfeit to the state after 30 years. So it's only the excess that is 10 years. And that was done what National Treasury wanted us to do. Then it should also be noted that with regard to the limit set, that it is not envisaged that National or the Minister of Finance, in consultation with our minister, will set such a limit that there will really be an excess of money in the reserve account. But that is speculation at this stage. This is something done which the Minister of Finance will do. I don't know if Mr. Van Harmelen has anything else to add to this particular clause.
It's
absolutely refusing. Right then, the next comment was regards to clause 6, utilization of money in the fund. They say that in regard to the payment of money from the fund, clause 6.1b of the bill merely provides that money held in the fund in terms of section 3a2d must be paid directly from the fund to the party entitled to the payment in question. In contrast, section 990a of the Administration of the States Act makes detailed provision for the circumstances and the payment and to whom it must be paid. Again, it is very difficult in this bill, because this bill does not apply to the guardian's fund. The persons and institutions to whom or which payments are made in terms of the administration of the state act differ considerably from the persons in the Justice Administered Fund. The Justice Administered Fund contains money from a wide variety of sources, from private persons to national departments, provincial departments and municipalities. The money itself is also not limited as money contemplated in the Administration of the State Act, but includes maintenance, bail, fines, as set out in clause 3. It would therefore not be advisable to attempt to list persons or institutions to whom money is to be paid, because such a list may not provide for each and every instance, and that may leave a gap in the legislation. Then they also feel clause 6.2a and deal the bill provides that any interest which may accrue to amount held in the fund in terms of clause 3a2d is to be applied to defray bank charges, and I feel that it's not correct that interest should rather go to the persons. Now, again, it should be noted that money paid into the Justice Administered Fund is paid out within 30 days of receipt beneficiaries. So no interest is earned on those amounts. The interest earned is on money in the reserve account, which is unclaimed money and money received which cannot immediately be allocated into any of the categories listed in clause 3A to 3 of the bill. It is not possible to calculate individual interest on the amount in reserve account, taking into consideration all the money in reserve account. The Guardian's Fund does not form part of the Justice Administered Fund, so the effect the GCP is concerned about does not apply here. It should also be noted that unplanned maintenance rarely ever forms part of reserve account. There are more other internal processes in place regarding unplanned maintenance. At the end of each month, static cases maintenance report must be drawn by the delegated person. Money remaining unclaimed for reasons unknown must be refunded to the respondent after diligent inquiry by the magistrate and after expiry of 12 months, and the same procedures were released followed with unclaimed bail. It should also be noted that even if money is paid to the National Revenue Fund, the money could still be paid out to a person having a claim. And that is the responses on the GCD's comments that we have received. I don't know if the committee has any questions on this very financial matter, if I can call it that. And then we would be happy to try and answer you. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Any questions? Silence still means consent. Honourable Mijaki.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Probably the silence is still to be debate. Probably the manner in which the whole thing is actually being presented, we're looking at the legalistic aspect of it. But you don't hear, because this is about finances, you don't hear as to how these finances are going to be properly accounted for in a way that will actually assist us in future to get unqualified or clean audits. The mandate of this bill is broad, and in a manner in which it's broad, it actually then makes the listing also complicated. And if we are dealing with it as a committee, but to some extent we get a feeling that we are not really having full control of this in terms of understanding. Because when you come here, it's for you to actually also help us to understand this. I'm sitting here and I wouldn't actually say that I now understand what were the problems, what caused the problems, and how we're going to sort out the problems with this new bill. And for me, that's my wish. I'm actually also asking myself, how much of money per annum do we put together? Because we need to actually be sensitized about it. We need to actually tell you the extent of this that you are actually dealing with. And also to get to understand as to when it comes to unclaimed funds, what happens to them. But more and more as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking maybe sometimes it's best if you have such discussions with Auditor General, in the Treasury, in, because it's a bill that I think has got to do with the department and its relationship with the Treasury. Of course, I don't want to mention the municipalities and provinces, but in terms of responsibility to the Treasury and to the also Auditor General, who actually gives all the opinions. So whatever happens, at the end of the day, if we're going to take it and table it to Parliament, because we really need to be properly sensitized about this, as we will say to South African police, we think it's solving the problem.
This question seems to be related to what Honourable Horn raised earlier, and I thought that in response you were hiding behind the enabling provision for regulations. So this question then I think calls for further explanation and not just a referral that there would be regulations to deal with them.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Van Armeren will try to share some light. I understand the concern and also share the problem. It is difficult because it's not law we're dealing with, it's financial management and accounting for that. And just if we put it into the grid, I think he may help us assist the system.
Thank you, Chairperson.
And
I don't necessarily want to go in too much detail, but this is only one of the issues that we need to address is related with the framework. Going hand in hand with that, the department has taken a lot of steps into ensuring that these monies that we hold are accounted for in a transparent manner. The department has over the last 3, 4, 5 years really gone on a complete exercise where we trained each and every official in the country that works with these funds to ensure that everybody knows what their duties are. We've gone through a process of capacitation. Previously, we didn't have a lot of people working with these monies. And from a monitoring point of view, we've created 45 positions in our regional offices, 5 in each regional office, to make sure there's oversight over these monies. We are in the process, as I said before, in building a new system, and it's being developed, it's being implemented currently. In the Northern Cape and we're moving on to the Free State. The system is not like our previous systems, which were just administrative systems. This system is built on SAP technology. You know the Germans are very precise with their systems. So it's a proven system that works, and we are sure that it will it will definitely give us better financial information. The system is also built on an accounting reference number. We've had agreements with all 4 major banks that they will not accept any money that is not properly referenced. Each case has its own unique reference number, so we can move away from where we can't identify these monies going forward. Then also, there are clear instructions within the department, the Department of Financial Instructions, and together with this new system, we've also introduced standard operating procedures. So yes, Chairperson, there's a lot that the department is doing. This act will not fix all the problems. There's a lot of other things that we need to do from the department side to fix third-party funds.
Yes, if I understood the question, it boiled down to say, how are we going to oversee what is happening? Because this seems to be a special fund, and now we're talking about the systems, the instruction, the training, all that is in-house. There's no way of knowing what that system is, what those instructions are. Now, isn't it something that should be provided for to say, we have established this fund, and this is how this fund is going to be administered? Are you saying again that we'll have to await the regulations and read the regulations to see how that is going to happen? Are those systems going to be defined in the regulations? Where does that sit us? Because, as you said, all that we needed was a legal basis. But that legal basis on its own seems to be far from enough, because there are systems, there are technologies, there are referencing which must be done with the banks, and we are left out of the picture. Can you elaborate more?
Sorry, Honourable Chair, if I can just pipe in here a little bit. The departmental financial instructions, I believe every department has departmental financial instructions, which is made in consultation with National Treasury as well, because they are, in the end, the persons who give the money and to ask the questions. So all these operative problems and manners are addressed currently in the Department of Financial Instructions. Now, it is envisaged that we will take those instructions, modify it, and then put it in the regulations, and put it in regulations if the Minister of Finance so agrees, because it has to be done in consultation with him or her again. We are also, there's an enabling provision for the instructions to be made, which is the financial instructions, which can more easily be adapted for operational issues. The whole purpose of this piece of legislation was to provide for the legal basis that Auditor General wanted. All the other operative matters will be addressed then by either the regulations or the financial instructions pending the direction of the Minister of Finance, what he or she wants in this regard. I would also like, Mr. van Hardeman, just to give you an estimated amount of what is currently in the, what is called the TPF, the third party fund, so that the committee can have an idea of what we are talking about, if the committee is in agreement with that.
Thank you, Chair. Broadly, we are receiving about 3 billion rand per annum in the third party fund. And we're also paying out similar amounts of money throughout the financial year. So it's 3 billion in, 3 billion out during any financial year at this point in time.
Honourable members, can we proceed? Proceed, Honourable.
Honourable Chairperson and Committee, that is the extent of the comments that we received. That was all, and that was the Department's response on that. I don't know if the Committee has any more questions. I realise that it is a very complex matter, and for, like Mr. Lange said, for us who are drafting the legislation, it was also something to grapple with how this is working. It was very difficult because I'm also not a finance person. I can't even do my own budget, let alone the department's budget. So it was very difficult to try and legalize this fund, and I fully understand questions that might arise, and we will try, if there's anything else, to address it to the committee's satisfaction. Thank you so much.
Chair, may I just, in response to other questions earlier raised specifically, regarding accountability, just and forgive me for doing that, but it's very obvious. There's nothing secret about this fund. And in the ordinary course of events, in Parliament's oversight, exercising their oversight responsibility in the process of budget hearings of the department, you will have full insight into each and everything, and you will be entitled to expect a very full and extensive report on what exactly is happening in the fund, how it's being accounted for, what the Auditor General has found in his audits or her audits on this fund, but there will be no holds barred. Parliament will have very comprehensive insight too, and the department would be accountable to Parliament also in respect of each and everything with respect to that fund.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Are you happy with that? I have some concerns. Namely that at the end of every year, universities produce law graduates. Let me add and say black law graduates, Africans, Indians, colored. Do you have a program in your division to make sure that you train black graduates in legislative drafting? Because I want to believe that we are not trying to disrupt my meeting. I want to believe that there is a great need not only to de-racialize the department, but also to create capacity for your departments, legislators, municipalities. Because if you look at municipalities, there's no legislative transformation there, nothing is happening because there's simply no capacity. But if in your work you were employing black graduates, train them, we would have a reserve to send to the provinces, to the municipalities to do legislative drafting. What are you doing in that regard?
Chairperson, yes, from our side, it's relatively easy. We've got an equity plan and we've got certain standards to meet, and I believe within our component we're actually meeting that. Whenever we have vacancies to fill, there are certain targets that we strive to achieve, and in fact we are achieving them. With regard to municipalities, that of course is local government, it's difficult for us as a national department. We're not really too involved in that. That would require some bigger coordination between provincial and national and local governments on that level. But there has been initiatives now, unfortunately I cannot speak on behalf of Mr. M. Daniels, who is the Chief Statewide Advisor, but there's been several initiatives from his side with regard to an outreach from the Office of the Chief Statewide Advisor, which really certifies all the drafting, to assist local governments, also provinces. But I can unfortunately not say that from our side there is a national initiative. I can actually help you.
I think Mr. DeLonge doesn't know about it because he hasn't got them. We've got an internship program at the Department of Justice, and I am happy to say that this is the second year that we in legislative development have interns. At this stage, we started out with four interns. Two of them applied for jobs and were already employed. But we've got, they are appointed as interns for a period of a year. And in this time, the interns that we had, they are graduates from various universities, and we conducted a comprehensive drafting course for them, how to draft legislation, which we also emphasized to them that if they can draft legislation, they will be able to draft contracts, everything, so that is the skill that they acquire. And then we are also, we make use of them to do for us research. Train them how to do the necessary research, drafting, etc. I know the South African Law Commission, Law Reform Commission, has got, they also got, I think, they've got three interns at this stage. The Rules Board doesn't have any interns, but in all the divisions of our department, there are interns because we've got this internship program running now in the department.
But 20 years after the 1994 democratic breakthrough, are you saying that the department has not been able to employ some black people who could, when you come here, sit with you so that they see how the committee works, what are the challenges, and in the process develop so that when you and I retire soon, the new generation that can take over from us?
Honourable Chair, that is the ideal. That is what we wanted to do, but we've got serious departmental budgetary constraints in such a sense that not everyone who's supposed to attend meetings can attend it, even us must go down. So the ideal would have been that the interns will come with us, but that is not a possibility at this stage, as I understand. But persons employed, permanently employed, they are coming with, if they are already employed, to come and see how the whole process works, because it can be daunting for a person to walk in here for the first time. So as to the other political decisions around that, I cannot give you any answer to that, unfortunately, sir, but from our side, we are trying our best to teach the people and to try and, but not everybody is really interested in legislative drafting, I must tell you, as we've seen that now with the interns, I think it's very boring. And so they don't apply for any post in our division. They want to go to the masters or to the state attorneys or wherever, or that is outside job. But that is unfortunately the problem we are faced with as a department. I'm sorry to say.
Okay, may I just add to that, it's just incidentally without, as we said earlier, some people deal with certain parts of legislation, but I've got six colleagues that could have dealt with this committee or there before this committee had the legislation been on their table. So it just so happened that in this instance, OFA dealt with this and they asked me to assist again as well as cost saving issue because I'm permanently based in Cape Town, so I can assist there.
Do you know of an organization of unemployed law graduates?
Okay. Honorable Mr. Chair, on the issue of the previously disadvantaged, maybe let me just congratulate you for having a female advocate with you. But to say the problem with internship, what the chairperson is saying that there's an organization of unemployed law graduates that when you go to such forums, what you hear is that they say that mostly these internships in government departments are meant for black professionals. And it's a thing that within the department, not only of justice, needs to be looked at. Because the impression is that jobs are not given to them. They go to university, they graduate, they become professionals, they have all the qualifications, but for some reason, they have to be taken to some internship program. And remember, internship program goes hand in hand with the amount of money that they earn. And that becomes a big problem, which needs some form of evaluation so that we shouldn't just talk off the cuff. You know, we must have facts. Then we actually then endorse this to help us to understand whether there is something wrong with it. And if there's something wrong with it, how do we change it? Which would actually help us to promote transformation.
I have a problem with this little thingy. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, the internship program, that was a decision. I mean, we are just near, we are the lowest place of the food chain. We don't make the decisions regarding that. So what the decision making processes was and what not, I am not at liberty to say because I just don't know what the internship or what the programs were and how they get the people. I can tell you that the interns at this stage are all black. These are white interns with us. So we are trying to develop them. And it's really, it was a privilege to work with these. And now from there, some have just graduated. Some have graduated 2 years ago. Some have graduated maybe a little bit further down the line. But I wanted to be introduced in the Department of Justice. And if they apply, as I understood, if they apply then for vacancy, the chance that they are appointed is far better than from a person applying from outside because already in the department, so it's a safe foot in the door. I can't really, as it, from my side, really answer all the questions regarding the development of those people. And I've got full sympathy having also children needing to get work. And I'm not really prepared, well, wasn't prepared to answer questions on this regard. This is not related to the Justice Administrative Fund that we are really talking about.
No, that would be wrong to say. Because you are here. We are saying that this committee and your work should also be a training ground for us. Now, when we talk about black graduates, we can only talk about them as interns. We expect them to be employed by the department as well. So that when you come here, you come with them as understudy. So that's what we're talking about. Otherwise, for the next 50 years, black graduates will just be interns and nobody is employed by the department. And that will not lead to the deracialization of the department. And you can see that there's a lot of unrest among young people because they see all these institutions, they are working well, laws are being made, but they are not a part of this world. So I think there's a need for a conscious decision to not only develop black graduates, but employ them in the departments. Anyway, we say this is our future, and if we mean it, it means we must prepare them for that future. So we're not blaming you. We're just making an observation, and I think we will communicate with your principals about this matter, because we are in the business of creating a non-racial, non-racist society. So we have to monitor the pace of that development. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, I'm in full agreement with you, and it would be wonderful if that would be conveyed to the great people, and it would be lovely to have some of our interns with us here so that I can really see and maybe besides make this the home and to stay and do legislation for other departments, because there is a great need, and I fully understand, I fully agree with you, and if that would be conveyed to the ministers or whoever is empowered, that it would be a great thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your understanding. I think we'll write to the minister and ask for a full briefing on how this matter is handled. We want to transform society, and we can't postpone that.
Just to make right on the statement to say, it shouldn't be intense to say, it should be black values coming into the system. Because there's already this perception about us creating a system that makes them intense for our life. Now, if you even bring them to parliament, it means we are endorsing that. But at the same time, we are saying, evaluate the system. So that is something somebody can tell us, is whether the system is working. Because, you know, sometimes there's unintended consequences of everything that you do. But for now, what I hear the person saying that we need to see even a graduate in jobs, in your department. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we still need to enjoy the freedom of the city of Cape Town, so it shouldn't take you keep you much longer than. Any other thing, Honorable Dallas? So that brings us to the end of the meeting, and thank you very much for your input and yes, are there any other amendments that you would table from your side, or that's all? Thank you very much, and you are well excused.